Welcome back to the Quality Time Podcast. I'm your host, Eric Woodworth, and man, we got an episode this time. There is a shocking revelation by my sweet brother and co-host, Jeremy Woodworth, that I can't describe to you what it is. You're just going to have to let it play out and realize this is the life he lives and this is the person that he has become over his almost 50 years of life. I was shocked. I was dismayed. And I think you will be too. If you aren't, I don't know. You ain't got a pulse at this point. But there are some good stories about comedy road shows, a run-in, and a fun bit we played on Joe Robinson. Honest Ash has her fun stories back. All the things you love about Quality Time. And the best way to say I love you back is to hop on the Apple Podcast, the Stitcher, the Podbean, whatever platform you listen to us on. Drop us one of those 5-star ratings. Costs you absolutely nothing and means the world to us. And you know what? Just tell a friend. We always appreciate the word of mouth as it spreads like wildfire and COVID-19. So without further ado, get strapped in, turn that volume up to 11, and get ready for Cabin in the Woods.
Kiddies, it's your old pal, the Crypt Keeper. This is a big shout out to my friends at Quality Time Podcast.
Gave me another week worth of wanting to live, so.
Yes. Oh, you're so welcome.
You are the band-aid on my ever-bleeding soul.
Oh, well, no, any luck on the job front, or should we not talk about it? Are you good?
I would just enjoy 3 weeks of unemployment and unemployment checks like never
sure.
before.
Totally feel that. Like, I support that.
It's after for 3 weeks that I'd be like, oh, God, I gotta work. I need to fucking move. I need to actually get up before like 11 a.m. every morning. So, no, whenever you get a job, you're like the first 3 weeks, gosh, this is great. Working every day, working hard. And then you're just like, oh gosh, I just want to die. I never want to work another day in my life.
It's just my mug
never ending cycle. So.
When work feels overwhelming, remember that you're going to die. Perfect.
Yeah, my dream is just like come across like, a dead body, and he'll have like the fattest wallet in the world and be like, man, I'm so rich now because I found a dead guy with a fat wallet. Man, I don't have to work for like months now.
And it's all cash. Yeah, just all big bills.
Hell yeah. Hell yeah. And bonds and a couple of like, you know, just raw bars of gold. So.
And his passwords to his like accounts and his Roth IRA.
Right, and he's like, here's where my buried treasure is that I keep in a tree, and I'm also a gnome.
Well. You know what's super embarrassing? I went to the dollar store today to get like a couple things, and I used a debit card that I don't use like a ton. I'm pretty like good at remembering all my shit, and I can't remember my PIN number, and I'm holding up the line. I had to get out of line and go on my app and reset my PIN and then get back in line at the dollar store. Everybody's looking at me like, oh, her card got declined. I'm like, I'm not poor. I just have a bad memory.
You poor bitch.
fucking poor white people trying to buy shit all the time.
Like the dumb shit, like plant your own mint leaf in this pot. Like, stupid shit.
Why don't you go back to White Marsh, Whitey? We need money here in Normal Town.
Welcome to Normal Town, population only me.
I don't know. I'm gonna get it for beer. So I enjoyed it, but I gotta.
You did that the whole time while I was getting beer, so you could now leave and then.
She was telling me stories about her vagina, and I was listening. I was very interested.
Bitch.
I was checking on Jeremy's well-being.
I said, "Look, you go this flap, clear this side, move the flap that way, clean that side. It's simple logic."
Got it.
I love referring to vaginas with the word flap. So
I love that you act like I wash it. You know, I just use a wet one.
Blip, done. How else do boyfriends get some fresh cheese? Hello, jeez.
I imagine that Ashley cleans her pussy. Like, do you know like the old 1950s picture of the guy who's like in the wind tunnel and his mouth is like getting blown like like this? Like, I imagine it's like that.
No, they actually have to tell people you are not supposed to ever blow like into a vagina. It's actually very bad.
Is that what happened? Why is it bad? I don't know.
I don't remember the specifics, but like you are not supposed to like blow into it because it's like bad. Kind of like
Are you telling me I've been doing it wrong this whole time and that these ladies didn't die of natural causes?
Yeah, like Eric, I hate to be the one to tell you your sex is bad, but I think I know why.
Is that why my wife's uterus exploded like an overblown whoopee cushion all these years ago?
You wore her out like a dollar store balloon.
I like that the guy who thinks he's like, I'm going to give you a blowjob, and just tries to fill her up just like a... I try to get as much air in there as possible.
It is wild to me what guys believe is like good foreplay. I'm just like, who taught you how to do this? And they're like, nobody. I just figured you'd like it. I'm like, no. Like, ugh. I feel like a wet fish is flopping around inside me.
Welcome back to the Quality Time Podcast. I'm your host, Eric Woodworth. Oh, thank you so much for joining us once again for another week of Fansgiving. But of course, as always, my brother, Mr. Jeremy P. Woodworth, joins us on the program. How are you, sir?
I don't know who you're talking about.
Oh, I'm sorry. Who's joining us on the show today?
It's me. I'm back from hell. It's me, Alex Trebek.
Oh, Alex Trebek, fresh from the dead. Because we're recording that.
That's right.
Alex Trebek actually died today, literally today, the day we're recording this. But
that's right, fresh death. What is? I'm in hell.
Do you think? I think it would be fun if Alex Trebek was in hell and he was the person that, like, you know, you have St. Peter, but in hell you have to play Jeopardy to just get yourself out of a lower ring of hell. And Alex Trebek is there. Hello, welcome to Satan's Jeopardy, where you can't win. And I don't know. Didn't they do that bit on what's it called? That movie Stay Tuned?
I think you're thinking of. Of Papillon.
But you remember that part in Stay Tuned. Don't they play Hell Jeopardy where they one of the answers is I worship Satan or whatever, and it's Satan?
I don't know about you, but it seems kind of weird that Sean Connery would die a week before Alex Trebek.
Yeah.
Suck it, Trebek!
Hey, if we lose Burt Reynolds next and it is a full cast of celebrity SNL Jeopardy, I lose my goddamn shit. Anyway, but before
the next person to die is that retarded guy from the Third Rock from the Sun.
John Lithgow? Anyway.
No, the retarded one.
Let me introduce our other co-host. Also joining us is Miss Ashley Pontius. Ashley, how are you?
Oh, hi, patriarch.
Now back to our man conversation over here about Satan. No, it's good to have you back, Ash, as always. Enough about Alex Trebek. R.I.P. Alex Trebek. He lived a nice 80-year life, though. I think he did okay for himself. So
agreed.
Man, what a week we've had. I have been just, I did comedy this week, guys, for the first time in, I felt like ages. I was at the Magoobies Joke House for Vic Di Stiletto.
Really? He does comedy too?
Yeah, Vic Di Stiletto. Pump. I can't. Well, it's really funny because Ash was up there. She came up to see me on Thursday, and we were sitting in the Wits End Saloon, which is attached, and there was also a show going on there. And host Mike Quinlan could not say the headliner's name for the life of him. And on a scale of 1 to 10, Ashley, how stressed out was Mike Quinlan about not being able to pronounce his name?
It was like he was trying to defuse a bomb. It was so bad that at one point I was like, you're going to be fine. And he's like, go fuck yourself, Pontius. I'm like, okay, he's doing really well.
So apparently Mike walks in to go say hi to Vic and Andrew, the owner of Magoobies. And he's like, hey, your name's Vic Di Stiletto, right? And they both look at him like, no, that's so fucking wrong. And he repeats it to him, right? And he's like, okay, I got it. And Mike walks out and he looks at me. He's like, they just said his name and I still can't fucking say it at all. Like this. So he's in the Wits End Saloon and he's pacing and he has his earbuds in and he's trying to listen to an announcer say his name, right, over and over again. And I'm like, dude, you got this. It's Vic Di Stiletto. It's Nick Di Villaggio. It's Dick Viagra. And I'm just, and it's frustrating. He's clearly visibly pissed at me right now. And so eventually it got to the point too where he left to go in the hallway so he could just try to hear it and not have me harass him. And he comes while he was gone, I lean over to these two people that are there to do the show at the Wits End, and I just met them like moments before. I believe it was Sam and some other guy. I can't remember. Sam was the lady. Anyway, it's not important. Apparently he has a lot of Instagram followers, whatever. It would probably help me to remember his name. But I lean over to him and was like, hey, when Mike Quinlan comes back here, I want ask him who what the name of the headliner is, okay? So then so immediately they comes back and they go, hey Mike, who are you opening for? And he goes, oh yeah Mike, why don't you tell everybody the name of the guy real quick? And I could just see, he's like, you motherfucker, you said all this. So that was pretty fun. And then I had a show.
You didn't suggest that he could do the Ashley Williams and just say, and now Vic D.
I did suggest that. And when he actually did, he just decided to do it announcer style and just say the name very loudly.
All right.
I thought Ash that had something work. There.
Oh, no, it does work. I've done it many times trying to pretend that I have enthusiasm for someone I don't want to host for. I'm like, give it up for. Yeah, you just drag it out. Hey, the same with sex. I'm like, I'm excited to be here, I promise.
Now, speaking of shows, you were also supposed to work Friday night at Magoobies, no?
That is correct. So, actually, I won't take much time because I know Eric's got some good stories and so does Jer. I had a tough Friday. I moved my cats from my parents' place into my apartment. And my cats did not enjoy the move. They screamed the entire time in the car on the way to the apartment. And I smelled it right as I'm pulling in the driveway that my cat has been so upset that he shit and pissed himself. And
a Pontius classic.
Up my cat. Yeah, like, right? Like, you knew it's my cat. You're just like, oh, look, it has no bowel control. It has to be Ashley's. So I get the cats in the house, and as I'm cleaning up my cat, Andrew's like, hey, I need somebody tonight. I'm like, I don't think I can do it. And he's begging me because I guess it's last minute. So I said, look, have someone cover the 7:30. I'll do the late show. It was great. I drive the hour and a half to Magoobies, and I get there, and the other comedian who covered for me comes out and looks hella pissed and says, hey, fun story, the headliner doesn't want anyone to host.
And I go, oh, I'm sorry. I thought I was having a stroke. Are you telling me I drove here for no reason? So,
hey, and
so that is correct.
Hey, and on top of that, though, but Andrew did, he paid you, right? Correct?
He did. Andrew was such a good man. Andrew paid me for all four shows, even the Saturday.
Oh, that's nice.
Because he felt so bad. So yeah, so that was very appreciative, and he was like, please have some drinks on us. I was like, but I gotta drive. So
yeah.
So I had a glass of wine and turned around and came back to my shitty cat.
But let's not tell the full story about how shitty your Friday night was, because also I had a show for Saturday that Rob Mayer called out of, and I called you while you're on the way to Magoobies, and I offered you a spot at the Saturday show, and then I was just, you were like, well, I think I'm working Magoobies all weekend, so I found somebody else. You called me back, hey, is that spot still available? No, it's already filled now. So it was just a comedy of errors that all hit you at once.
I am also the world's biggest pathetic pussy, that I am like crying over the most mundane things to Eric, and I'm just like, nothing's going my way, and he's like, oh, that sucks.
I'm like, honey, don't jerk the wheel into that ravine. You're gonna be okay. You just didn't make a hosting spot at Magoob's. Don't worry, you'll
it's
be fine.
It's amazing how easy I can be undone. It is concerning,
but things did work out ultimately, because you ended up filling in last minute for a show up in Blair for the one and only former 98 Rock host, Mr. Mickey Coachella, right?
Yes, and that was also thanks to you. Thank you for putting us in contact. I had a great time, and I was only mildly afraid of being in Trump country, so it was fine.
Hey, that happened to me, because I was doing a show last night, obviously, at Horizon Cinemas, which went really well with Justin. Ryan Nazer filled in at the last minute. And awesome. Hey, the first thing when I came out to host, and he was just like, I heard somebody go and heckle go. I said something. I was like, so how's everybody's 2020 going? Pretty shit. He was just like, it is now in Biden's America. That's how the show started. and so I leaned into that for a little bit, and that was pretty fun. I realized, I was like, oh, this is a crowd that'll like. I did some fun Joe Biden jokes, and hey, listen, I really do think Joe, you know how they said Trump will be good for comedy? I was like, probably not. I think he's a little too, he's not going to be good at, I do think Joe Biden will, like, in the same way Obama wasn't good for comedy, because like he kind of, you know, he had this air of him like, you can't make fun of the world's first black president, right? But listen, right. Joe Biden is literally the George W. Bush of the Democrats. He is going to be funny for the next 4 years to make fun of. I really do think that, because he does the same thing George Bush does, which is just say moronic shit and then just like, you know, you did the thing. He's going to be just like that for the next 4 years. And maybe we'll all get a little bit of laughs out of our president being an idiot. That'll be really good. I'm excited.
I totally agree with you. You are spot on, because I cannot wait for New Orleans to flood again.
Hey, one other thing, though, about the show last night. So the show last night, one Joe Robinson was in attendance of, and me, as you know, Joe Robinson has a very famous closer known as the pie plate closer, okay? It is his signature joke, and the joke is that, you know, he's a handsome guy. He's like, I'm not the best looking guy in the world, right, or whatever, but, you know, I'm okay. I did all right for myself. Well, I was at Ocean City, and as you look around, there's these girls, and they're rating guys as they walk by. They're writing little, you know, numbers on these pie plates and paper plates and holding them up and rating them. So I was like, fuck it, I'll go by. And I walked by and I looked back, and it was a 9, an 8, and a 9. I was like, that's pretty good, right? And everybody goes, yeah. And then the next guy walked by. He was pretty handsome. I was like, oh, let's see what this guy gets. And it was 98, 97, 96. Hey, by the way, my name is Joe Robinson. It's the famous pie plate closer, right? We made a pact. Justin, Ryan, and myself, all of us did the pie plate closer. Every single one of us. And we prefaced it by saying, hey, this is a real thing that happened to me. And it was just... The first time, Joe, hey, when I did it first, Joe gave it a standing ovation. When he saw it the second time, he saw... Okay, I see where you guys are going with this. And then Justin went full on. He turned that bit into like the up to the 10th power. There is an elaborate story about his dad and how his dad used to like fuck him in the ass. And then he turned it into a full aristocrats version. It was a 10 out of 10. Oh, God bless him. So big homage to the great Joe Robinson last night. We love you, bud. Thank you kindly. Jeremy.
This morning was probably one of the greatest mornings I've had in weeks.
Yeah?
I've had an unbelievable amount of frustration and just realizing that I'm a complete moron when it comes to home ownership. I've been staying up late and I realized the cabinets in my kitchen are so utterly and hopelessly infested with rats, and I can hear them. I can actually number them by the sounds they make at 4 a.m. in the morning. And have I been proactive about this? Yes, I have, because for the last couple weeks I went out and I bought a product called Rat Zero with a little rat on it, and it says for rat control. Okay. So I've been feeding these fuckers Rat Zero for weeks now. My wife finally looks at the directions like, there's no poison in this. It's just for baiting them. And I'm like, are you fucking kidding me?
So you've been drawing more rats in this entire time.
I even bought a different product called Rat X with a little X over the rats. And I realize, oh no, this doesn't have any poison in either. It's just for baiting them. And I'm like, are you fucking kidding me? I've been feeding them. I've been fucking feeding them. I'm like, why aren't they fucking dying? They're eating bowl after bowl of this fucking fake fucking rat poison that isn't fucking rat poison.
You thought you were killing them and you're just feeding them a buffet every single week.
I can hear them minutes after I fucking put the shit out there mixed with peanut butter. I'm like, well, there's another bowl gone. I hope they fucking die. So,
the night
my fucking and here's the thing that I'm even more dumb about. Is I bought it from Ollie's for $5 thinking, man, I'm making a deal here. You know, this is cheap poison. I mean, it's only $5. I get a whole bag, I'll kill these fuckers off quick. Thank God I don't have to pay $20 for real fucking poison. No, I'm making a deal. It's fucking Ollie's fake non-poison. So,
oh, good and cheap. Good and cheap.
Yeah, it's cheap, all right. Yeah, and I fucking returned it. But
the
night that she fucking tells me this, I am so enraged with myself and just being a moron. And I literally took, you know, I have like these Tylenol multi equate, you know, the generic. And I just start grinding up as much acetaminophen as fucking possible, just making it powder and mixing it with fucking peanut butter. Oh, yeah, they ate all that fucking shit. It's like, I'm going to fucking OD these fuckers. I don't know how many I got. But the next morning, I had a dead mouse on my stairway. I was like, oh, I got it with acetaminophen. On Sunday morning, I'm buying as much fucking real poison, and I grind that up. And yesterday, oh, yeah. And all that poison's gone now, and it got a little quiet, except, oh, my gosh, I'm freaking out. I stay up till 4 a.m. It's quiet as fucking, Christmas morning, you know. I'm about to go to bed at 4 a.m. and all of a sudden I get ready to go to bed and the doorway to my fucking upstairs room just starts like moving on itself. I'm like, oh shit. I'm thinking, is a rat going to move a whole fucking door? Oh yeah, a rat's moving a whole fucking door. I'm thinking it's like a raccoon. It's got to be a big fucking animal. I get my BB gun. I get right up on it. I realize, oh shit. I had a rat trap, the glue trap, and the rat has dragged it into the recess between the door and the stairway and is clawing at it to try to get away. This fucker puts his little fucking head out under the door, and man, I shoot that fucker right in the fucking head.
Oh my God.
Fucking blank.
With
the satisfaction of me being a moron feeding these fuckers for weeks on end. And then it just gets worse because the blood is just like everywhere, and I put the blood everywhere. But the best part is
I'm never coming to your house ever.
I feel like the scum of the earth, the worst white trash in the fucking world now. And I put the rat in the trash can. I can hear him like aspirating on his own blood. So I'm thinking, oh shoot, I didn't finish the job. I only shot him twice in the head. So I start putting more fucking holes in him, and I'm like, oh, I finished the job now. He's dead. And so meanwhile, I have like blood in a trail all the way from the stairway to the trash can. It's like, oh yeah. But just that satisfaction of killing and the bloodlust.
Jeremy,
there's people that have rats as pets and everything, but if they start eating the fuck out of your shit and destroying your fucking kitchen, it just makes you fucking angry as fuck.
Have you ever tried to do have you ever seen the farmer's method of doing it, where you take a big bucket and just put it like that, and they all just drop into the bucket, and then you can use it against your enemies.
What, putting in the diseased ones in the well to have leprosy? So,
yeah, exactly.
I know you've seen blood and whatever, ice.
Oh,
with,
my gosh. Jeremy, that is a tet. You've won the story war.
No, that was just the beginning of the night. I think around 6 a.m. after I finally went to sleep with the wife, the dogs sleep on the bed with us, all three. Usually two to three of them. But the black lab mutt, she tends to, like, if I sleep on my side, she will tend to sleep almost backed on my back, but sometimes she will sleep almost into my ass. So, this morning...
Oh, no, Jeremy.
Oh, no.
Apparently, she had it so perfect that her head was almost exactly in my ass while I'm asleep. And I, of course... just let one rip right into my dog's face. Just the fact that she woke up and started shaking her head like, holy fuck, fucking vibrated her fucking head and ears. But I started laughing. I was like, okay, I don't wake up the wife from laughing. I just could not stop laughing so hard that I farted in my dog's actual face in the middle of the night. So.
Oh my God. This is an episode. This is an episode to remember. I can't. Agreed. The depths of your depravity have been on full display today, Jeremy. I will tell you, hey, Jeremy, do you remember that picture you sent me of your collection?
Of the zit?
No. I'm talking about the picture of the pile next to your bed.
Oh, yeah. That's just a little pile.
Hey. I sent that picture to Die Laughing Productions, and I said, try to guess what this is. And the first thing that comes back was, tell me that's not Jeremy. Tell me that is not him. Tell me it's not him. And then I was on, I forget what I was doing. I was on a Zoom call with Laugh Finder. Joe Robinson calls me. He was like, tell me that's not your fucking brother. Tell me, swear on your children that's not your brother right now. Swear on it. I was like, Joe, I can't tell you that. He was like, oh my gosh. Justin says he was visibly, he's like, if I stared at that for like one more minute, I would throw up. I would, oh my gosh, Jeremy's showing me the picture of the rat.
Oh,
and he's
the bloodlust.
Oh my God. Gracious.
You are the John Wayne Gacy of rats.
If I could leave it on a floor as a message to the other rats, I would.
Jeremy becomes Vlad the Impaler of rats. He just has them staked out front to show the other ones he means business now.
Yeah, no, that's the way you do it in Baltimore. You gotta send a message to the other crews.
Now, Jeremy, we have two more things before we get into tonight's Fansgiving episode, which we're very excited to go over the movie. Shout outs Dan Crabb for the thing. But Jeremy, you wrote a song for this week that you wanted to share with the crew.
Well, this is one I've been working on a long time because you know, I think most of my songs are pretty dumb, and they're not a lot of thought put into them. But this one I've been working on for a long time, and I think I put my, probably my best musicianship into it, and best guitar work, and probably just finding the drum beat alone. I hope this is, if it was ever my last song I ever wrote, I hope this would be it. So,
all right. So here's what Jeremy, artist extraordinaire, has been working on all week. Here we go. Jeremy, what a beautiful piece of art you put together for us. Thank you, sir. Thank you for that.
I think it's amazing how if you play the guitar in a certain way, it kind of sounds like itching.
It does. It does sound very itchy. It does sound very itchy. You know what that is going to bring us to, though? I think that's a perfect segue into
a
little
our movie.
No. We need to get
Ashley's part.
Need to get a little feminine touch added back into the show. Oh, and it's about that time again for another segment of Honest Ash. And here's Ashley Pontius.
I love that. Hello, listeners. It's Ashley Pontius here. Ladies, I'm gonna let you know if you're going down on a guy. I want you to look him deep in his eyes, and I want you to spit his load into his mask while still making eye contact. Happy quarantine. This has been Honest Ash.
And that's another Honest Ash. Thank you, and join us again. What a magical experience, Ashley Pontius. God bless you. Ugh. There we go. Finally.
Can I tell you what I hated about my old girlfriend the most?
Yeah, I'm waiting.
Is that she tried to snowball me a couple times.
Whoa. So like after she tried to make out with you after the coming in the mouth part.
No. The snowball is where she tried to save it and try to put it into my mouth.
Yeah.
Oh, I get
that's can honestly say I've never been snowballed before, but I could say I probably wouldn't like it. I don't think I wouldn't be excited about my own jizz in my mouth.
It was just her way
of trying to be funny, which I didn't think was funny. So,
man, what a good bit.
That's interesting. I've actually never heard of that term before. The closest thing that I could think of that I knew about was called the Yeti, which is whenever you spit it into his Yeti cooler.
Yeti
well,
coolers.
You know, most guys can't afford Yetis.
Yeah, Yeti
but it
cooler
keeps it
is
cold
actually
for 16 hours.
Well, that's because I save money by just using my own asshole to keep it insulated and cool. You know, I just shove a beer directly into my ass and I pull it out, and it's the same temperature. It's weird. The little known fact is the asshole is the nature's koozie. It's a little known fact about it.
Wait a second. That means that you haven't seen the movie Clerks, because then that's where he explains the snowball.
And I don't remember that snowball.
And he finds out that his girlfriend has done 37 dicks. Because he meets the guy that wants to say, hey, I snowballed that guy. So
yeah, but is it Mallrats? Wait, did you say Clerks or Mallrats? Because I know Mallrats is when he's because I was thinking Mallrats. Because I've only seen that when he sticks his hand between his butt cheeks and it's like shake hands with someone you hate. I love it.
Oh yeah,
oh, that's just the stink palm.
Yeah, the stink palm. That's a true show of power. So
I'm a girl, this is all new to me.
And by the way, when I met Michael Rooker, I promised him I would never stink palm him. So.
All right. That's respectable. Okay, let's get into tonight's movie since we're 40 minutes into the pod.
Can I have my 30 more seconds with my theme song and my trivia game for men?
Can we save it for another week? Because we need bits from week to week, Jeremy.
We've had enough. I got my two stories already. That's more than
Jeremy,
I
there's no way
anyway.
You're going to top the rat infestation in your house. There's no way that in the ball song, there's no way what you have is going to do. Leave the listeners wanting more. Just know that there's a new bit coming next week that Jeremy worked on. And because we're
maybe
running
just
late.
Make this like a 4-hour episode.
Yeah, yeah. We'll do it. This is almost going to be a two-parter already. And Ashley has places to go. So tonight we're going over for Fansgiving. Thank you so much for Daniel Crabb for the shout out. Also a former guest on the show, but also big fan of the show. We are going over the 2011, dare I say, classic Cabin in the Woods. Man, what a fun. God, I love this movie and I love that it got suggested. It is, I would say, one of the more perfect comedy horror films I've ever seen. You know, it goes right up there with, Dead Alive and Evil Dead 2 or Army of Darkness. It fits right in there as just that kind of perfect movie. By the way, shout outs Deathgasm. If you guys haven't seen Deathgasm, also a phenomenal comedy horror film from New Zealand, which is on Shudder right now if you want to watch it. It is also a fucking 10 out of 10. But this one, oh gosh, first of all, amazing writing and directing crew. It's directed by Drew Goddard and written by Joss Whedon. Obviously, us in nerd world know who Joss Whedon is for, you know, obviously bringing some of the Marvel's franchise MCU universe to life in the Avengers films. But Drew Goddard was always his writer on a bunch of stuff. They go all the way back to Buffy the Vampire Slayer. Drew Goddard's also adapted the scripts for Cloverfield, The Martian. He's did 13 episodes of the TV show Lost, and currently he's produced all 52 episodes of the TV show The Good Place, which if you haven't watched is a Ted Danson show that's actually very, very funny.
About all the Cloverfield series.
Yeah, and the whole Cloverfield series. I mentioned that. Yep.
Oh, sorry. I threw
that in there. Now, Josh and Drew actually wrote this script in 3 days after they had lost a project that like they flopped on. They locked themselves in a hotel room, and when they emerged, Cabin in the Woods was born onto the world. Now, Drew Goddard got the idea for Cabin in the Woods while working in Los Alamos, New Mexico, which is a place filled with scientists and co-workers living their daily lives, regular office struggles and shenanigans. But really, in Los Alamos, all these scientists were building nuclear weapons that could end the world. So his idea of just how Cabin in the Woods came basically came from working in a place where a bunch of scientists were making nukes. So
does anybody biblically knowledgeable that there is a prophecy that there's like certain demons for a certain day and a certain year in the Tigris and Euphrates that are gonna be unleashed?
I'm counting on you right now.
Well, it's like, you know, even though it's a movie that's made up about like pagan gods coming up to destroy the world, it's like there's just that little bit of actual truth in it. So, you know,
that kind of rocks. I dig that. Now, the movie itself, it actually got filmed in 2009, but wouldn't get released until 3 years later because MGM, the studio that kind of produced this, went bankrupt, and it didn't get picked up. It was a fully finished movie that just couldn't get picked up until Lionsgate, who's produced some of the better horror films, I think, of like the modern 2000s. The Saw franchise comes to mind when I think of Lionsgate nowadays. Them and Ghost House, they are like the two big daddies, right? Mm-hmm. But they picked it up, and they actually, Joss Whedon and Drew Goddard decided that they weren't ever going to release this movie, and they thought it was fucking horrible at this point. But Lionsgate liked it so much, they convinced them it was a good movie, and that they needed to release it. And listen, God bless Lionsgate for that, because that fucking rocks.
Yeah. I was working at Regal Cinemas when this came out. Mm-hmm. And they gave us all promotional t-shirts, and I remember watching it the night it came out, and I just thought this was like the perfect love letter to horror fans.
Wait,
like,
a second, which Regal did you work at?
The one in Hagerstown, Maryland.
Oh, dude, that's way out. No, I remember Cabin in the Woods because I think it was the literal second standee that I ever built. And it had Aww. So many little parts of the house that on the standee. It was like I had to look at the directions at least 3 or 4 times before I could figure it out. Every standee, you get it by the second one, except for the fucking stupid Jurassic parts. Jurassic, no, the Transformers movies with the giant fake fucking dinosaur. Million yeah. freaking little parts. And like, where the fuck does this stupid fucking piece of cardboard go in this piece of shit? It's going to take me an extra minute to fucking find out where the fuck this shit goes. Fucking bullshit. This job sucks. I have to drive another fucking half hour to drive to another fucking job. I fucking hate my life. Fucking kill me. No, it was great. No, I love making
Do you want to hug Jeremy?
No, I stole so much shit from theaters. I that was the greatest part of my job, was stealing stuff. Oh. So.
No,
especially
yeah.
lenticular posters. Oh my gosh.
Oh no, I can get that. I mean, the thing I miss most is giving all those BJs in the last. Like, oh, it's 2 p.m. on a Thursday. No one's in Happy Feet. Let's go bang one out.
So, and this there is a wonderful cast of characters in this film. Kristen Connolly plays Dana, not really famous for much more than this role.
isn't she like the 5G commercial chick now?
No, definitely not the same lady, because that lady has humongous knockers, and Kristen Connolly does not. I recognize that tit print from a mile away, so...
Would you say that she might have been in porn one time?
I don't know. I don't like to do it, but if it was, I'm Googling it right now, and I'm on Pornhub, and yep, we're going to need to stop the podcast for exactly 30 to 45 seconds. This is the jumping off point, though, for one Chris Hemsworth. As you guys know, Chris Hemsworth was, when he screened for this movie, the producers of this actually saw him, and he immediately got signed on for Red Dawn and Thor. So he got, this is his big jumping off point, was this movie. Oddly enough, though, the way things worked out is he went to go film Red Dawn and Thor, and both of those movies were released before this, as we talked about, mm-hmm. because this didn't get released for like 3 extra years. But really, his big coming out party was this film. The world, we might have a different Thor. You know, we might have had a Matt Damon Thor this whole time had it not been for Cabin in the Woods. So,
I'm Thor.
It also has Jesse Williams, who plays Holden, the light skinned African American fellow in this movie. I only know him because my wife watches Grey's Anatomy religiously and rewatches it all the time, and I know he is a doctor in that, and is the second hottest person behind Dr. McDreamy in the series. So.
My dad is Odin, and I'm very good at math.
Yes, he is. Now, it's also, the cast is rounded out by the by Richard Jenkins, who plays Sitterson, and you might recognize him from the movie Step Brothers. He actually plays Will Ferrell's dad in the movie, or I'm sorry, he plays John C. Reilly's dad in Step Brothers, which I love him in that role. And Bradley Whitford, who plays Headley, he's actually, I always remember him from Billy Madison, because he's fucking Dickhead Eric. So I love that Dickhead Eric is in this movie. It was great casting for both of these guys as the scientists who are kind of orchestrating this terror upon Chris Hemsworth and the rest of the cast.
I would agree that those two are fantastic casting. I love both of them as actors. I think they do fantastic work. But I remember Dickhead Eric not just for Billy Madison. I loved him when he was much, much younger in Twin Peaks.
Oh, yeah. He did. It was in Twin Peaks, right?
Yeah, he's the psycho asshole brother. I'm forgetting the character's name. But the guy, the rich guy that runs the town, essentially, his brother. It's just so wild to see an actor's trail to fame. It's fun.
You know, a lot of good paths through this. So a lot of good minds.
Richard Jenkins will always be the father of Dexter. Dexter when he was on 6 Feet Under, who got killed in the first episode running the funeral home.
You're right.
And as he finds out about his father, that because he ran a funeral home, he had a rented apartment that nobody knew about that he probably just hung out to like smoke weed at. And also when he come back in flashbacks and talk to his children in their kind of mind's eye about, oh, talk to my dad, and he's like just telling it like it is, and it's like he talks to Dexter as his gay son's like, oh, I guess I'll never have any grandchildren here. just the way the show would just like honestly shit on people in their own mind's eye. It was great. So
two other fun cast members from this that we haven't mentioned yet is Amy Acker, who actually plays Lynn. She's one of the employees at the giant corporation that's orchestrating this. And Fran Kranz, who is who plays Marty, the stoner dude in this this movie, which, by the way, he has a bong that converts into a fully functional coffee cup, which the cast actually spent $5,000 of the budget of this movie went to actually creating this functioning bong that made also a functioning coffee cup, which, by the way, in 2016, I want to say, we actually, Tommy Simbazo bought a prototype one of these off of Wish and gave it to one Brian Preston. And it does work as both a bong and a functioning coffee cup.
I'm going to guess on Wish now that it's only $10.
Yes, so. It is only $10. But hey, the technology was from this movie, just to be clear, before the Chi-Coms already fucking picked it up and then made it into a cheap budgeted thing.
Thank you, Movie Magic, for making the most expensive bong ever. If only this bong had been on that Black show where he tries the most expensive of everything. Oh, this is like a $10 million cigar and also a $5,000 bong. Yes.
So very, very good stuff. It actually is. I think he wields it as a weapon at one point to fight off one of the undead monsters that's trying to kill him. It's also worth mentioning that Franz Kranz, who's the stoner in this, there is a scene in this movie where they're all supposed to go jump in the water, and you'll see he's the only one that doesn't take off his clothes and get into the water, and it's because he's actually more jacked underneath his clothes than Chris Hemsworth and the other guy, and they thought it would be weird if they saw him shirtless. Right. So they were like, no, we gotta put your shirt on, pal. Josh Wheaton actually commented saying he looks like a ripped Jesus. So
he's kind of like Willie the groundskeeper.
Yeah, groundskeeper Willie. He's just fucking jacked and oiled like Ned Flanders, right? Underneath that,
you know, you keep saying the word jacked, but when I think of being really muscular, I think of being Hugh Jackman. So
yes, that's now we're in the right place. Now we're in the right place. Oh. So the story goes like this. kids that go and think they're on a regular old cabin trip find out that they're not just being picked off one by one by a zombie redneck torture family, but in fact are essentially part of a blood ritual controlled by a giant corporation to appease elder gods that will destroy the earth if it doesn't go to plan. They have to choose their fate, though, in this basement of pure horror. And this giant corporation basically sets up essentially the Truman Show or a 1984 style Big Brother thing where they don't necessarily control the actions of them, but they push them. They release pheromones. They put shit in their hair dye to make them just think that they're stupider and just fall into all the old classic horror tropes that we're used to. I'm like, yeah, man, don't be fucking out in the woods. And they're like, release the pheromones and put the temperature up 15 degrees. And these guys are kind of pushing the strings so that they can kill and complete the ritual. So hopefully elder gods won't destroy the universe because I guess we lost at Mortal Kombat. I'm not really sure.
You realize you're going into the basement of the fucking couple from The Conjuring. It's like, oh, well, you know, we keep all these demon-infested artifacts in our basement, you know, and we let the kid go in there every once in a while, just touch some shit and bring some demons around the house and torture everybody, you know. So
I do love that, though, that this movie is kind of there's this juxtaposition of like, hey, this is a classic horror movie you're watching right now. Almost mixed with The Office, and it's just guys, just they have office pools on what's going to go down. I love how all of that shakes out, and that dynamic between Richard Jenkins and Bradley Whitford as they're just kind of talking about like, hey, who's going to do it? Are you in the office pool yet? He's like, well, which one should I pick? Should I do this? I want you to pick the one that makes this situation end as quickly as possible. Like, all the little catty shit that you just get at a workplace, you get all that in this movie.
I loved that line when he says exactly that. He says, more than anything, I just want this moment to end. It's so funny because I was like, that is something I have both heard Eric say and heard said to Eric. So that was very funny.
I think my favorite part of the entire film is once they're watching the shit go down on the monitors, and the black guy, the new guy who's just getting into the corporation, just kind of pokes his head into the screen like, oh, you're watching some people have sex?
So I do love that they have. So essentially, though, it's not just this corporation, I guess, works worldwide. So they have a Japan location that's trying to complete the ritual. Like, every country's trying to do it because, like, you know, to save the world, we just got to make this happen. And I love that, like, there's like a place in Kyoto, Japan, that's basically doing the ring over here. And they're like, well, you know, if we don't make it, certainly the Japanese will save our asses this time. I love that this this ritual has to be done. But they have like just an array of things that could kill them based on their choice that they make down in the basement. And there's all types of shit. Like, I love like the fake Hellraiser box that's just a sphere. Like, they have a fake lament configuration down there and a fake pinhead. They have werewolves, and it's all based on like the million things they could choose down there. And the betting pool is very, very funny. Among the choices that the office can choose from of how everybody's going to die, it is werewolf, alien beasts, mutants, wraiths, zombies, reptilius, clowns, witches, sexy witches, demons, hell lord, angry molesting tree, shout out Evil Dead, right? Yeah. Giant snake, deadites, another Evil Dead reference, mummy, the bride, the scarecrow folk, which I think is like a shout out to what is it? The town.
It's, Oz.
No, I was thinking the town that never saw sunset or whatever.
No,
it is.
The town that feared sundown.
Yes. That guy who looks like a scarecrow.
I think it's that.
There's also snowman, dragon bat, who we'll hear a lot more of later, vampires, dismemberment goblins, sugar plum fairy, merman, which, goddammit, is a great one.
that one.
The reanimated unicorn, who definitely shows up, Huron, Sasquatch slash Wendigo slash Yeti, Dolls, Zombie Redneck Torture Family, The Doctors, Jack-O-Lantern, Giant Twins, and Kevin.
Kevin. Now,
and Kevin is a shout out actually to Sin City, who that Kevin is
the
obviously
Elijah Wood.
Is the Elijah Wood character in Sin City, which is a shout out to them. They finally get down there and they're all holding different things. Like Chris Hemsworth is holding on to the lament configuration sphere, and then you see the other one playing with a little box, and they haven't quite activated it yet. But sure enough, finally our heroine picks up. Dana picks up a book and reads from it the horrible words "Dolo supervisio caro, dolo sublimius caro, dolo inominamus," which means pain outlives the flesh, pain rises the flesh, pain ignites the spirit. So,
but Eric, you missed the part where they actually also picked up my vibrator and they were attacked by an overwhelming yeast infection.
You know, the worst thing is that these fucking idiot kids do this, and they're not even stoned. It's like the only way you're supposed to like conjure the living dead is when you're stoned trying to impress a girl in your trailer. You know,
that,
hey,
that
look, I'm gonna read from the Book of the Dead. Oh shit!
Well, can we talk about the fact, real quick, that am I the only one who also looked at all these characters and thought? Of the Scooby-Doo series?
Yeah, I think there's a Scooby-Doo vibe. I think there's a vibe from a lot of things. I mean, they make so many references to other horror things. I mean, it's really, you know, it's a love letter to the horror genre in general. Like, all the way down to the means of transportation, where they take a Rambler, which really isn't a Rambler, but it's a shout-out to The Hills Have Eyes, you know? Mm-hmm. Everything in horror exists within the Cabin in the Woods universe, which is pretty awesome.
The only thing that could have made this movie better is if they'd taken a Delta 88 up to the cabin instead of a RV.
I would have cummed my pants if they hopped in a Delta 88 yellow. Oh, fucking God, that would have rocked. And I'd also love how they do that same Sam Raimi thing where it's like, oh, look at this tiny cabin, but when they get in, it's literally like a 1,400 foot square foot cabin inside with multiple bedrooms, but from outside, it looks just like a tiny piece of shit. That's very, very funny to me.
That's a good point. Can we talk real quick about that two-way mirror?
Yeah, tell.
Because that was like such a cool thing when I first saw it. But it was funny because I didn't really understand what the big deal was about the two-way mirror. Because I'm like, I've used one on Eric all the time. I'm like, oh, yeah, let me see those silver dollar nip tips.
Wait. What?
I see you. You're not wearing pants, Eric.
I'm at my home. I'm allowed to. I do like that. So their choice is made, and obviously it is the hillbilly demon, whatever's. Oh, I'm trying to find the word again.
It was the redneck.
It's the zombie redneck torture family that
Are
gets
you drunk.
Not yet. I'm getting there. It's the zombie redneck torture family that gets reanimated. So maintenance and one other guy wins, the intern in this movie, who the intern is a very, very
Yay!
Fun cameo role. He's played by Tom Lenk, Ronald the intern. There is a very, very funny part that you really can't see, but we'll bring up when we get to the third act here in a minute. But hey, this zombie redneck family is fucking great. I love that they have the guy, one of the zombie redneck family, just uses a bear trap on a chain to just haul people in. That shit rocks. And when every person dies, they release a little bit of the blood into the ancient gods that's like filling out this little symbol and stuff. So very, very cool
stuff.
That's
how we get the intro to Lionsgate films.
Yes, yes, that is true. That is true. So, they're able to get picked off one by one, you know, by controlling the situation, releasing pheromones. People are fucking. They want to stay together. They release some other thing. They're like, no, we should split up. We'll cover more ground. It's just they make all the worst decisions that you could possibly make in a horror movie. And ultimately, though, we find out that our stoner is not affected by the effects of that because of the power of smoking weed has clouded his mind so much that he can't be affected by anything that's happening to him. He's the only one that can figure it out. And eventually, what happens is everybody gets picked off. I like how the first lady dies. She gets sawed in half by the psycho zombies. And then Chris, I love Chris Hemsworth's death, where he's just like, oh, they blow the bridge because they're trying to leave and they barely are able to do it from the control room in time. And then Chris is like, I could jump this. And I fucking love when he tries to jump it with the dirt bike and just hits the weird Truman Show wall like this. And he's just tumbles down a million. Oh, God. It's so goddamn good. I loved it.
Also, I actually was kind of frustrated. I was hoping during the game of Truth or Dare, I kept hoping, which I think we all were, I was on the edge of my seat hoping she was going to get mauled by the taxidermied wolf, like that he would come to life and just maul her face off.
I love the whole time. It's funny that scene where she makes out with the taxidermied wolf, though. I was reading about that. Apparently, because it's like it looks dusty, they covered it with powdered sugar so that she would be able to make out with it. And apparently, director Drew Goddard made her do that scene multiple times just so they could get it right. Which I think is fun and creepy.
And that's how COVID started.
It's also worth mentioning that they have this array of monsters that they could unleash on them all underneath the cabin here. And the one guy, Bradley Whitford's character, Headley, he wants the merman so bad. He's just like, I'm a merman guy every year. And he's like, God damn it. He had the conch in his hand. He was about to blow the conch and we were about to finally see the merman. But no, we don't get the fucking merman. But God damn it, we do get the merman. So after that, after a close brush with death, Marty, who's played by Fran Kranz, the stoner, has somehow survived when we thought he was dead. And our final heroine, Dana, they meet back up and they're able to find through one of the graves that they came up in the elevator that takes you back to the main thing. Now, meantime, they're thinking, fuck, we've already found out that Japan has failed in their thing because they turned they didn't kill the room of 9-year-old children back at in Japan. So they've turned the ring lady into a frog, and they're like, yeah, Makanaidana, we did it right, like this. And so it's fucking dope, and they're like, oh shit, it's all relying on the US. All across the world, all the other rituals have failed. They're like, we gotta make this happen or the world's ending. And now they get loose.
Did you mention that the Stockholm was a send up to the thing because it was like in Antarctica?
Oh, you know, I didn't think of that, but that makes sense. Yeah,
I read it in the trivia. That's the only reason I know.
So he's able to get the elevator running that takes him back down, where we get to see the Room of Horrors down there. Now, it's all different types of like monsters. I love the little ballerina girl that's nothing but teeth. You get to see the fake pinhead, which is really just a guy that has a saws in his head. And if you look at the credits, you can actually see that his name is Fornicus, Lord of Bondage and Pain.
Which everybody knows.
I love it.
Which everybody knows is one of the guitarists from Guar.
Yeah, Fornicus. Yes.
But I finally pieced it all together that these guys put themselves in a hotel room. It's like, okay, we're going to mix up the movie Cube, Evil Dead 2, and the Truman Show, and 13 Ghosts. That's going to be the movie right there. Yeah.
There is some 13 Ghosts in there.
But it's like 1,000 ghosts, not 13.
There is.
That's the next song.
There is one little Easter egg in there that I did notice watching. Well, that I also read in the trivia. But I'm a big fan of the game Left 4 Dead. If you, Jeremy, you've played Left 4 Dead, I'm sure.
I have part two, and I haven't even played it yet because all I play is Call of Duty.
Left 4 Dead is one of my favorite Valve games. God, what a blessing that game is. But there's a, if you look at when they pan out and show all the different monsters that can be released, one of them is the four different monster types from the game. A tank, one of those little... latching on things from Left 4 Dead. They're all in one little box, and that was because there was going to be a crossover with Cabin in the Woods and Left 4 Dead, like a download pack where you get people from this movie in there. So they had tried to marry the two universes. It still made the movie if you look really closely, but ultimately, because of MGM flopping and going bankrupt, and... I muted it just so I could do this massive burp just now, and Jeremy can't control himself. So, but because MGM folded and had to declare bankruptcy, that deal fell through. But ultimately, technically, Left 4 Dead is part of the Cabin in the Woods universe. So there you go.
Interesting. I I know the game. I've just never played it. For a hot second, I thought we were talking about my autobiography.
So,
this is called After the Lovin', Left 4 Dead.
So, they are able, our stoner and our virgin are able to make it into the depths of the actual facility where they release an actual human kill squad to come in and actually kill them. Because the way that the ritual works is that they have to kill a fool. Like, there's an each different archetype. There's a whore, a fool, a something else. But they all have to die. And maybe the virgin can live or die. It doesn't matter if the gods
are
happy.
One of them has to be a libertarian.
Yes, one of them is a libertarian. Yeah. The other one is
Eskimo.
The other one is a staunch supporter of the New Green Deal. You have to have a windmill enthusiast. It's a very very specific thing that the elder gods are
inspired. Someone who's very against any sort of technology except for bomb making.
I would have loved to have shown up for the auditions, and they're like, "Oh, what part are you auditioning for?" And I'm like, "The whore." And they're like, "Oh, we're gonna retitle it the Hot Whore." Send me away.
Yikes!
Did anybody know that when Ted Kaczynski was actually arrested by the ATF, that he had all his bomb making materials hidden in his beard?
I did not know that. Wow. Wow, Jeremy. Who knew?
I have so many materials in my beard hidden, you'll never find everything.
Oh, that's a good one. I really love that.
Almost same size.
So, our heroes that are left to fend off the human hit squad that's coming to take them out decide that, hey, from this control room, we'll just release all the monsters on them. And God, the third act of this movie is just a 10 out of 10. They release all the monsters, and it is just a bloodbath for the third act of this movie, where you get to see a unicorn fucking fuck some guy to death with his fucking antler. You get to see the merman. God, the merman is a 10 out of 10 kill as it just flops up next to Eric from fucking Billy Madison, bites him, and then it's not just what he looks like, which is horrific, and that he's flopping on dry land over toward him, but when he bites him, there he has a blowhole on the back that just spurts blood out. Oh God, it's just so goddamn good.
Did you see the director commentary on that?
No. What did it say?
Apparently on the set, there's like so much fucking blood came out of that thing. They're like, "Well, this is utterly ridiculous, but it's hilarious. We're gonna save it. We're gonna put it in the film anyway." So.
I mean, I loved the merman, and you know what?
Agreed.
Fucking dickhead Eric was right. We needed that in the movie. We needed the merman movie more than anything.
Can we also give a send up to the greatest use of REO Speedwagon in a movie? So
yeah,
agreed.
Better than the Karate Kid. Somehow better than that.
And Happy Agreed. Gilmore.
Is it? Oh yeah, it is in Happy Gilmore. Damn it, gosh, I do.
Hey, you're right.
And Saturday Night Live, because Will Ferrell really loves REO Speedwagon when he wears his flag of underwear in the office. So
now there is
who
this
doesn't love REO Speedwagon.
Now as all hell's breaking loose and everything's going to shit within the facility at this point. Tom Lenk, who plays the little intern in the movie, he's you can see on the monitor, but it's hard to read, and they tried to do it different ways, but the signs that he's holding up say, help me, I'm in the utility closet, but Dragon Bat has my scent, I'm Ronald the intern. It's just very, very funny to me. So
can I sing a little bit of REO Speedwagon?
Yeah, absolutely, Jeremy.
I just want to sing a little bit of my favorite song. Heard it from a friend who, heard it from a friend who, heard it from a friend who, heard it from a friend. Heard it from a friend who, heard it from a friend who, heard it from a friend who heard it from another friend, yeah. Heard it from a friend who, heard it from a friend who, heard it from a friend who heard it from another fucking friend, you whore.
It's like talking to Eric about what's happening in the comedy scene. It's pretty accurate. Thank you for that, Jeremy. That was
I think it's good that like artists, when they lose out of lyrics, they'll just use the same line over and over again, like you forgot it in the beginning of the
song. I heard it from a friend who heard it from another friend who then played golf with another friend and then told my mom. I like that song that he wrote, a whole song that I heard that you're a whore. That's really what that song is. Is that I heard, yeah. Hey, guess what?
I heard you've been cheating on me.
I heard you were a fucking slut, you fucking bitch. That's
you know,
such a
the,
nice
the real
way.
Artists, they learn when you run out of lyrics, you just start scatting, go scooba dimba dimba dee doo doo. I heard it from a friend, scooba dimba dimba doo.
This episode is devolving.
It is devolving so fast, and we can't get it back.
Four beers in.
We can't get it back on track, and I don't want it to. So, what are some other notable kills in here? I mean, the one main kill room where all the guys get killed is just a total bloodbath. I love that it's just, I mean, I think before this movie, Dead Alive was probably the biggest like gory scene with like the lawnmower kills and stuff like that.
Love it.
It somehow outdoes the great Peter Jackson in this moment.
I'd like to go ahead.
Oh no, sorry. I was just gonna say. I mean, I don't know if I totally agree. I mean, it is phenomenal, truly. Like, I agree. I'm still a Dead Alive fan with the lawnmower. I still, for me, like that takes the cake. But I do love that the Shaggy type, because I cannot remember his name, I love that he kills one of the zombies with a trellis, and yeah, that was pretty funny. Yeah. And then you see the zombie hand crawling across the elevator to the guy's face, just kind of pulling at him.
Just like in Evil Dead 2 with the crawling hand. Do you remember the book that he put on top of the trash can to try to hold the hand in Evil Dead 2?
I know the answer to this, yes.
Actually,
I don't.
He puts a book on top of the stack of books. The top one, the one says A Farewell to Arms.
Yeah, it's a good bit. It's a good bit.
I just want to give a send up to the totally original character with the round metal thing, because he has like circular saw blades going through his head.
Yeah, almost a shout out. I do like the saw blades robot, yeah. Because it's almost like that's what the movie Chopping Mall should have been, right? Like that would have made sense if Chopping Mall was those kind of robots.
You know what would be really cool is if they had like a demon creature that had like a video camera built into his head, because he was like a video cameraman in real life.
A DVD player guy. I like, hey, we're at Jeremy's of course referencing Hellraiser 3, which, you know what? I rewatched Hellraiser 3 recently. It's not as bad as I thought it was. It actually, okay. there are some solid moments in Hellraiser 3. Like, like the fact that there is just a wall of flesh that they have to feed all the time to keep happy. Like, that is a very, very fun part of that movie.
Well, I'll tell you, it's no Hellraiser in space.
Yeah, that's Hellraiser Bloodlines. Gosh, what a piece of shit movie that is. But I do I do enjoy the lore of it. I do enjoy the lore that it adds to it.
I haven't watched every single one because I don't have the patience as an old man, but does anybody know if they actually did a good story on Le Marchand?
That's the toy box maker, right?
Yeah.
As far as I know, his only appearance is in the Hellraiser Bloodline film, which would
Hellraiser 4. Oh, so they did do a little bit on him for like a couple minutes or something?
Yeah, he's in Hellraiser Bloodline because, well, the whole thing about Hellraiser Bloodline, I know we're getting into this, and it should be a future Quality Time episode, is that they go back in time. They show the history of the toy box maker who makes the Le Marchand, who makes the original Lament configuration, but the spaceship that the guy uses it, which is just a giant hell box like that, he's actually the bloodline descendant from Le Marchand, and that's why it's called Hellraiser Bloodline, you fucking twat.
I'm sorry. I think I remember watching 4 and it was so long ago I've completely forgotten about it, except that it was a configuration in space. So
yeah, it is good. Hey, exciting news. There has been a lot of shitty movies in the Hellraiser series. The most recent one where they replaced Doug Bradley, it's a tough watch. But I will say the first half of that movie, I think it's called Hellraiser Judgment, is really not bad. It really, the new Cenobite that they invent in this movie, the typewriter guy, is actually really, really fun, and I do like him. But God, it's hard to replace a Doug Bradley. You got to get somebody with some better acting chops than this fucking Eastern European guy that they just fucking picked to throw pins in his head and fucking act in front of me. I can't take it.
Well, my two favorite are definitely Hellraiser Goes to College and Hellraiser Goes to Washington when he talks to Congress and he's like, "You've been controlling things on Earth long enough. And if only the little man will control things." And he's like torturing everybody in Congress with like chains and everything.
So. I'm a personal fan of Hellraiser Scared Stupid, which I felt like is the strongest in the series more than anything.
But can I also throw in my two cents? Mm-hmm. I think we're also forgetting the classic Air Hellraiser.
Air Hellraiser, the Air Bud Hellraiser movie.
Working it on the skateboard and always flying through the air in slow motion. So when Pinhead does his impersonation of Jimmy Cagney in front of Congress, like, "I'll tell you all right now, you know, I'm a Cenobite and I'm proud Cenobite. I come to Washington to clean things up. I'm Jimmy Cagney."
So this movie finally reaches a climax when our heroes make it down to the giant holding room where you could see these stone effigies where the blood is going in, and there's two left, the Virgin and of course our stoner friend who's supposed to be the fool, and good old Sigourney Weaver makes her cameo appearance in this movie as
the
director.
Made the most money in this movie.
Yes, Sigourney Weaver comes in
for 5 minutes.
Now, oddly enough, Sigourney Weaver said that there was Sigourney Weaver was picked for this role, but there was another person that they tried to get, one Jamie Lee Curtis instead of Sigourney Weaver. Which, hey, I wouldn't have hated a Jamie Lee Curtis either in this.
Agreed.
It would make sense. They're both
queens. If she did the dance during the scene, that would have been even better. So,
they get to it, and she explains, like, "Listen, you motherfuckers are going to die. Otherwise, this giant ancient god behind you is going to destroy the world." So, our heroine Dana pulls a gun and tries to shoot her, but she gets attacked by one of the fucking werewolves and gets her fucking back gnawed up. Through all of this melee, our stoner is able to kill our sweet Sigourney Weaver, throw her over the edge, and then both of them, still alive, are sitting there realizing, like, you know what? Maybe humanity does need a restart. We're not going to do anything. I love that they decide not to save the day and just let the Elder God burst through and do this. Now, the ending to this movie, though, is Josh Whedon said that this was actually his send-up to the that whole scene was based on the movie Aliens. Yeah, where he's talking to the Gorman scene, Jeremy.
with in Vasquez when they hug and say, "You're such a fucking asshole, Gorman."
Yeah.
The grenade in their fucking face. Can I say I wish that one of the five people the sacrifices would have been the drawing that the porno guy made in The Big Lebowski with the giant dick would have been one of the people sacrificed on the wall. So
that would have rocked. That would have rocked. Yeah. Now, it's funny. Josh Whedon was actually asked one time at a interview or like a panel. They were like, "Hey, are you ever thinking of doing a sequel to Cabin in the Woods?" And his answer was like, "Did you even watch the fucking movie? There can't be a sequel. It's unsequelable. I destroyed the world." So now the body.
Whatever. Asgard is dead, and they get off in a spaceship. So whoever's off in space, they can watch the world get destroyed, and then meet Thanos.
Yeah. Now the body count in this film is pretty impressive. Total kill count that you get to see on screen is 69, which is nice. And yeah. But if we're to believe that they destroyed the entire world, then the real technical body count is 6,873,074,741,054, which was the population in 2009. So, I mean, technically, the biggest body count we've ever seen outside of probably Avengers Infinity War, because he killed half the universe. So I would say second biggest body count in movie history. I'm saying it right now.
And if Thanos actually did kill half the universe, that's probably at least a couple billion people.
Yeah, a couple billion.
Yeah.
So,
can I make a suggestion? Be a little preemptive here with our fans that listen to us religiously. That I really want to make a suggestion for The Last Starfighter, and I'm already going to give this away because it has the best ending line of any movie ever made. Because the bad guys lose in the movie, and their ship is about to be destroyed. The two bad guys look at each other at the end. They're like, "What are we gonna do? What are we gonna do?" The guy looks at the other guy. "We die."
Yeah,
it's the best fucking line of any fucking ending ever for a movie. So
that does fucking rock, man.
And it was CGI, the first CGI movie before CGI was always shitty.
Ooh, hell yeah! Well, that brings us to an end of 2011's Cabin in the Woods. Jeremy, give us your final thoughts.
A pretty good comedy, you know. It's I lost count of how many send-ups they did to so many horror movies. You left out the killer backwoods family when he turns his head. That's a send-up to like Michael Myers when he kills people at the same time. Nobody's gonna have a basement with so much cool shit, you know.
Yeah,
but it's a great movie. At least it's memorable and making fun of horror movies. So.
Hell yeah! And Ashley, what are your final takes on the film?
I will tell you that this is the movie that put the phrase "husband's bulge" in my vocabulary.
How did we forget about husband's bulge? Oh, it's so good.
I definitely didn't.
No,
we didn't even talk about the cool gas station guy who's the real believer in the bullshit, and he's like, they're gonna feed upon it. I'm on the speakerphone.
Yeah. That would be one Tim Dzarn, who plays Mordecai, who is like the old guy that like warns the kids don't go. And he's part of the whole corporation thing. And he does call like Eric and them up at the thing. And he has him on speakerphone because he's totally bought into his character. He's just like, "Wait, I'm on speakerphone again, aren't I?"
The worst thing that Sean Cunningham ever did was killing off the old crazy drunk in Friday the 13th Part 2. So
I will say Tim Dzarn, the guy who plays Mordecai, which is, he does a phenomenal job as a character actor in this movie. He is in one other pretty, I'd say, semi-famous modern horror film. He's actually in Texas Chainsaw The Beginning, which was the reboot of the Texas Chainsaw Massacre. He's actually the guy that delivers the very deformed Leatherface as a baby. So there you go.
That's his baby Leatherface. The Leatherface babies. Leatherface
babies.
They
do
they love
shit.
To kill other babies. That's... like the Muppet babies, but with murdering serial killers. Oh, look, there's Lecter. He's got a baby face mask on.
I think that's going to do it for this episode. Ashley, where can people find you at, love?
You can always find me on social media and Instagram at Ashley Pontius Laughs for shows and updates.
Hell yeah, check her out. She's doing big things. The Second Saturday Shit Show is free every second Saturday of the month. I still plug this even though the co-host is who does this, Miss Kimberly Callahan, is no longer on the show, but you should go check that out. Mike Quinlan, that auto bar is awesome. All things Eric Comedy at ericcomedy.com. Eric with a K, comedy with a C. I got some more comedy shows always coming up, so check out all the juicy deets there. And then check out our merch store. All the good shit is on Eric Comedy. Jeremy, take us out.
Someone's in my fruit cellar. Someone in the French.
I think he blew the levels out there. We didn't get all of your soul. You want to give me one more soul?
Soul.
Toilet water. My balls.